The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
10 minutes after 6, it's rather ironic that we have heavy fuel as the bumper. That's my bumper of choice to open up. I just always loved Dire Straits of that riff. Just always have. And heavy fuel indeed. Salt Creek Fire mapped at about 3,300 acres this morning. We're seeing heavy fuel just about everywhere, even though Salt Creek is not as bad as some because it's burning on a lot of a burn scar before. So when the forest was restored in a prior fire, now it's being restored again to burn in the scar. So only about 2% containment on that, Salt Creek in Jackson County. And Sulphur Fire ended up, this is like near Beaver Sulphur Campground. We used to go by that on the way up to Wrangell, you know, the back way on the forest roads. I guess they figure that's maybe a couple of acres or so. They ended up taking some helicopters and some people off of the upper Applegate the other day. And hopefully they get that under control. Doesn't grow much out of control. That's the era. That's the area of matchstick trees out in those areas, and it's always a bit of a concern. Meanwhile, the big one, Northern California, Siskiyou County, Shelley Fire grows to over 6,800 acres, still no containment. Lots of evacuation orders leaving now, and I wanted to talk about this. I'm going to talk about this with Greg Roberts when we bring him in for the latest fire reports, because around 8 o'clock or so, the stats get updated, and we're going to bring you the latest on that with him. And something which has been bothering me has been the new use, or it seems to me to be a new use, of fire mapping, or the fire maps with the zones on them. And I was mentioning that, you know, when you hear this thing, here we have the Salt Creek Fire, 3,300, evacuation in JAC-325A, you know, that area needs to be evacuated. And these designators mean nothing. They mean nothing to regular people. And then everyone's telling, well, Bill, you just have to go to the county map, and then you find out what JAC-220 or 325A means. Well, I'm looking here at the Shelley Fire, and KDRV had a report on it, and they have all of the... you know, the alphabet soup of all the zones which were being evacuated, because, of course, it's a pretty darn big fire there right now. A lot of places have been ordered to leave now, all right? CIS-2203B, CIS-2203A, CIS-2102, CIS-2108, CIS-2105. It means nothing to most people. Even KDRV, fortunately, though, put next to it, north of Patterson Creek Road, leave now. North of Sawyer's Bar Road, leave now. South of Kidder Creek Road. Why don't you just leave it at that? It's almost as if the fire map zones have been designated to be helpful to America, to first responders or to emergency managers. We've got to send some choppers over to JAC-325A. You know, and that means something, right? You know, to them. Because they're sitting there with their probably map displays on their computers plugged into the county. I don't know if that's exactly how it works or not, but I'm just presuming that's how this ends up working. And so that's fine. But then they tell us, well, you got to evacuate 325A, JAC-325A. I understand that. It seems to me, and I'm sorry to call fire babies or emergency management systems a bit ugly, but I think they are. Everything that should be released to the public needs to be easy to understand and bring clarity to a conversation. CIS-2203B doesn't bring clarity to a CIS. It brings clarity to emergency managers looking on their fire map. You see what I'm getting at? Saying north of Patterson Creek Road you have to evacuate, or north of Delta Waters you have to evacuate, that's something that we can relate to. Or, oh, by the way, you need to evacuate down by South Fred Meyer. You know, that's that sort of thing. I'm thinking back to what happened in Alameda. Now, I'm on the Everbridge app, you know, the one that the counties are using here. And it worked. And it works. You know, it zaps me every now and then. But even then, I'm thinking, we'll send a text message. Okay, so I get a text message. And, where's the one from yesterday? Everbridge notifications. RVEM. In other words, Rogue Valley Emergency Management, I guess. Jackson Vax Info A Level 1 Be Ready to Evacuate has been issued for Jack 325-A. More info, and then there's a link. All right? So if you don't know what Jack 325-A is, if that's your neighborhood, or if it's your mother's neighborhood, or your, you know, your other relative's neighborhood, you know, you're supposed to keep track of all these numbers, then you have to go and log in to the Everbridge site, or you go to the Everbridge link, and then it goes to the county website. Here is the challenge, the danger that I see with this, and I'm going to talk with Roberts about this a little bit later, is that when you have real emergencies, the big emergencies, having to go to a website's a bad idea. I remember the night that everyone was trying to get information from the Jackson County website, and the internet was in and out during Almeda. If I recall correctly, a couple of Charter Spectrum offices ended up burning down, and there were some real problems. There were some real problems keeping a reliable internet in some neighborhoods around here. The internet was overloaded on the on the cellular networks too, because there was so much problem everywhere else. And so if you're trying to sit there and load an already overburdened Jackson County website to find out what Jack 325A means when the fires are starting to roar through neighborhoods, etc., if it, God forbid, we ever have that happen again, I hope we don't, but if you did, that's going to be an issue. And what I would like to see, and maybe this is something that I can talk with the emergency manager of Jackson County, or talk with county commissioners and see if we can get some conversation going on here, is that the Everbridge notifications on text messages need to be more detailed, even if you have to send more than one, maybe send two. Send Jack 325A, which is, you know, over by Lake Creek. You know, that's where it is. I looked it up on the fire map, you know, but I had to go to the county and look it up. There's nothing intuitive about it. Everything about emergency notification is non-intuitive. Heaven forbid they use the EAS system, you know, the part of on the radio stations and TV that goes, ah, ah, ah. No, they want their shiny Everbridge app only. I think that's really what's still going on. It's irritating to me. I wonder why we even bother, maintaining these EAS systems at this point. Because everything's about micro-targeting, and it's like they don't want us to know everything, or they don't want us to have too much information to think about. But then, you know, Jack 325A doesn't mean squat. And if the internet's not real good, or if the county website is really overloaded, which could be happening in a big serious emergency, people don't know. I suppose the county could also go and send out a nice paper map, you know, old school paper map that has all of those zones. There's like about 80 of them. You know, look at Jackson County. We're just diced up into about 80 zones. Yeah, that's what the feds will use someday to locate the concentration camps. There you are, Zone 325A, report to your camp. Okay, that's conspiracy theory, say. Anyway, the sort of things are just kind of bugging me. It's like they designed the emergency systems for emergency software rather than actually informing people. Is it just me? Maybe we could talk about that off and on this morning, okay? It's 18 minutes after 6. This is the Bill Myers Show, 770-5633. Don, you were here. You wanted to talk about, if we really wanted to save fuel or save the planet and go down the gangrene global warming situation, we should be focusing more on what? You had an idea there.
This is a great opportunity for me and my neighbors, because I listen to you and I think, what, are we not the masters of our respective destinies? That if I don't have internet or a cell phone, I don't know that a fire's
coming? If you don't have the internet or cell phone, you're not qualified to know, is what they're saying. And right. If your internet is out in the middle of a big conflagration, you're not qualified to know. It's one of those things. Or if you don't have the right app, if you don't have the Firewatch or what is it, all the various apps that they put out there, well, we're very sorry, you're just going to die. Okay? That's just the way it is.
I just want to play by the rules. We've learned that energy first, the first dogma here, can either be created or destroyed. And We give tacit agreement to that, and I don't see a counter to it. So we use what we have, and we're being sold a bill of goods with the solar collectors, which can only pay for themselves if electricity prices keep going up, up, up.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the way that solar pencils is if you make conventional power 30 cents a kilowatt hour. Great. Okay, where are you going?
But in a larger frame here, if we ship, we need stuff all the time, and we see transportation is a major part of our lives. We need things from the Orient and things from the East Coast. But it takes, here's for the greenies now, it takes four times the energy, whether you measure it in dynes, calories, or ergs, to move your package by truck as opposed to train.
Mm-hmm.
Four times. You don't hear them talking about that. But instead, we get PSAs to unplug phone chargers when not in use.
It is kind of interesting. We sort of waste a lot of time picking up pennies when there are dollars that could be saved. Yes, right?
If you do one load of drying on a clothesline, you save more energy in that one load than in 70 years unplugging your phone chargers when not in use.
And I'm sure you figured it out, too. Well, you know, you bring up an interesting aspect, because the nation's rail network has been looked at as kind of old school. Well, that's old 20th century technology. And you are right, though, that the energy savings moving freight by truck is four times as much as rail. Maybe not quite as much, but I've read similar statistics about that. And the challenge that you have is the nation's rail network has not really, you know, changed all that much for about 100 years, really. And out here in the West, depending more on freight, let's say here in Southwest Oregon, would be a real problem. You know, there's a reason why Southern Pacific ended up, giving up this rail route through here, right? Because of the mountains and the curves. It's a very difficult area to do railroading in.
Yes. But here's something I would have you recall. It was just in your lifetime, let's see, through the early 70s, we had REA, which was the local delivery system of Southern Pacific Railroad, REA Rail Express.
Right.
So it would be shipped into the Medford Dock and hot freighted out into the area. And I've traveled in many, say, 20 countries. I've ridden the Orient Express, which is rail, but they have little spurs to every burg. And
we used to have spurs to every burg, too, back in the day.
So my mother rode the train from Gold Hill to Medford. She walked up the street to Newberry's, where she worked. So I mention this because it's government control that has micromanaged our lives to eliminate that system, and is to have uber control over what we do and how we think. And we can no longer think in creative ways.
Let me ask a serious question, though. Do you think, though, that with the creation of the interstate highway system, you know, with Eisenhower, late 1950s, you know, back before I was born, I know you were just a kid then, you know, at that time.
Yes.
Wouldn't you think that that really convenience won out? Because it is much more convenient to put it on a truck and much quicker. Rail network is considerably slower than the trucking network. You can get a truck for the most part to deliver it much more quickly than most rail delivery. That's just the way it is.
Okay, we need it now. This is the now generation, and the internet gives me access to ancient wisdom. So what do we do with the wisdom? We ignore it. We have biomass in Southern Oregon, and that could be used better. I would travel toward Lassen Park every fall, and I would see at night literally hundreds and hundreds of slash fires. Northern Oregon, Northern California, Southern Oregon, and there were rail spurs running right through there. And that all could have been bunched into cars. I've had clients with these.
Okay, I know where you're going at here. It's like we consider it morally superior when you're the gangrene then to restore the forest through burning it. But if you were to actually cut the forest down and then burn that in biomass, that's bad because it's carbon release, right? That kind of thing?
I'm just throwing that out there. I'm trying to be creative.
You have to be creative because you're dealing with a lot of stupidity. I don't know. I was reading this Substack from a Midwest doctor. I don't know if you ever go on Substack where, you know, they have a lot of good writers there. But he actually opines that a lot of the stupidity we're dealing with is generations of vaccine-damaged children, and he's a conventional medical doctor, and that it's we're having great difficulty educating a couple of generations of severely vaccine-damaged kids. But that's for Conspiracy Theory Thursday, my friend. Thank you for the call, all right? You be well. All right. 625. Don, always good hearing from you. 625. This is KMED and 99.3 KBXG. Eric Peters joins me here in a few minutes. I'm going to talk with Jim Sullivan, too. 7 o'clock, different kind of time to do the interview. We're going to do it. He wrote a book that I've been having a great time reading. It's Backstage and Beyond Complete, 45 years of rock chants and rants. He's practically talked to anybody worth talking to in the music world. And some of the stories are just wild. Especially with some of the cantankerous old classic rockers. We'll share a few minutes with him coming up.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precise and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease of quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today, get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736.
The Sherm's Markets Jackson County Fair. It's an ag venture. July 16th through the 21st. Enjoy great entertainment, food, 4-H FFA exhibits, carnival rides and games, and more. Wednesday, July 17th, KTVL 10 and Hunter Communications present 38 Special at the Bi-Mart Amphitheater. With Southern Rock smash hits like Rockin' Into the Night, Caught Up in You, Fantasy Girl, Back Where You Belong, and Hold On Loosely. Just hold on loosely. Don't let go. Since you've been gone. Lawn seats are free with fair admission, but you're going to want to get close for this one. Reserve your seats starting at just $45. It's the Sherm's Markets Jackson County Fair, July 16th through the 21st. It's an ag venture. Get tickets now at theexpo.com. That's theexpo.com.
Did you know that with Good Guys Guns Background Concierge Service, customers get approved the same day? And for under 21-year-old customers, Good Guys Guns at 4934 Crater Lake Avenue gets you approved in half the time of the big box stores. That's right. Good Guys Background Concierge Service gets you your firearm faster than the other guys. And this service is free with every firearm purchase. Good Guys Guns, the Valley's firearm leader. 4934 Crater Lake Avenue. Good Guys Guns.
Good Guys Guns.
Hi, I'm Paul Strandberg with Valley View Nursery, and I'm on KMED.
628. Other news this morning. We have Josephine County Commissioner Dan DeYoung in a bit of a pickle this morning. The county coming out and saying, we have a safe workplace and we don't sexually harass and everything. All had to do with what happened at a meeting they had the other night in which he appeared to say to a fellow staffer, well, come sit on my lap. Come sit on my lap. And yes, it was a female. And needless to say, the fires of heaven are being brought down upon Commissioner DeYoung. Got to watch what you say these days. So that's what's coming out of Grants Pass. But the county ends up coming out and saying that, yes, we treat this seriously. In other words, they have to, you know, prostrate themselves before the God's diversity, equity, inclusivity, and sexual harassment, you know, those sort of things. So that's the, yeah, you got to watch what you say. It's not 1962. It is not that time, just so you know. So that's another story going on in here. I'm kind of amused when I'm listening to the national news every time, even town hall, all the stuff coming in. Everyone's worried about President Biden. He's not going to step aside. He's going to stay in. What can we do, the Democrats? And, I can't. And it's true that, generally speaking, in conventional politics, there's not a whole lot you can do to President Biden to make him leave unless he doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to leave. And why would he want to leave? Because he has to hang on to the pardon power. You got the Biden crime family things. And besides, let's just face it, being president when you're the president's family is pretty damn cool. We just know that, right? That's just the way this is. And I'm amused when I hear all of the hand-wringing about this because it's really not that hard to get rid of them if you just take what we already know. There's the 25th Amendment. You go to the Hur report. The Hur report when they say, "Well, we're not going to prosecute him on this stuff because essentially he's a feeble, senile man." Right? Remember that? And that's all you have to do. You bring it out, 25th Amendment, boom, gone. If the Democrats are really serious, if they're really serious about this. And then, of course, there's the fact that essentially the United States of America, and I know this is a little more in line with Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but the United States of America is essentially under, in my opinion, government intelligence agency control and has been for a long, long time. Just about everything we're doing, the media, it's a controlled agenda, controlled Overton window through the intelligence sources. The intelligence agencies with their surveillance powers practically know anything on everybody that they want, that they want to target. They've got to know where the dirt is on Joe. If they're really serious about getting rid of Joe, you just bring it up. You just bring it up. By the way, we actually have the receipts on the crimes committed in Ukraine and all of your dirty dealings. And, of course, you're showering with girls or whatever the case might be, right? And then, of course, you have that that pesky Constitution part in which, you know, the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. The House of Representatives shall have the sole power of impeachment. The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. So when you listen to all the hand-wringing going on, just kind of laugh at it all. And I would say hand-wringing on the right and the left, really, when it comes right down to it. Because if they're serious, there are plenty of tools to take a infirm, senile President Biden out. If you're truly serious about taking him out, all right? If you're serious. But you have to be serious, and it may not be fun. You know, it's not fun to have to actually deal with Kamala Harris. Oh, my gosh. Wouldn't that be interesting? Of course, now the news comes out. Oh, there's a brand new poll, I think Fox was reporting on yesterday, shows that Kamala Harris would beat Donald Trump. Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure she would. The Democrats hate her for the most part, but oh well. Elections have consequences. Stolen elections have even more consequences. And this is the Bill Meyer Show on KMED and KBXG. Eric Peters with me next.
American Rancher Garage services most vehicles and offers state-of-the-art amenities, affordable pricing, and prompt service you can trust. If you're looking for a reliable, full-service automotive repair shop that provides old-fashioned service to keep you and your busy life moving, you've found it right here, just across the street from Elmer's on Biddle. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRancher.com. 541-499-6673. American Rancher Garage, we are united through service.
Jasper's Cafe, voted Medford's best burgers for 14 years running. Jasper's has been a local tradition for over 40 years. Come in and see for yourself why we've been recognized nationally for our amazing burgers featuring outrageous toppings and a delicious range of meats from local grass-fed beef to elk to bison and more. We're just 1 mile up North Pacific Highway from the mall, or check out our menu at jasperscafe.com. Jasper's, burgers with attitude.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did, or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford, nowiresnow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided. By Dish.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. The Salt Creek fire near Eagle Point has increased to 3,300 acres. It's 2% contained. The biggest challenge for firefighters is the triple-digit heat and afternoon winds. Most of the fire growth has been on the southeast, southwest, and northeastern edges. A new Level 1 evacuation notice was also issued by the Jackson County Sheriff's Office. A group is hoping to qualify their ballot initiative for Oregon's November general election. It would give each Oregonian $750 annually. funded by a 3% corporate activities tax paid by businesses with annual Oregon sales of at least $25 million. Oregon is one of 27 states with cases of severe acute illness associated with a brand of candies that contain a potentially harmful chemical, muscimol, found in mushrooms. The FDA says Diamond Shrooms candies can cause seizures, abnormal heart rates, and unconsciousness, and should be thrown away. They're also investigating one death. Bill London, KMED.
When you choose a contractor, how do you know you're getting the best? Anyone can claim to be the area's top, but numbers don't lie. When you hire Clouser Drilling, you're getting a company that has 1 million feet, 4,600 wells, 53 years, and four generations drilling here in Josephine and Jackson County. Clouser Drilling has six licensed drillers and four modern drill rigs, giving customers confidence in one great product. The number's 541-476-7795. The name's Clouser. Contact Clouser Drilling today.
Hey, it's all fireworks and forage and 4th of July here at Butler Ford and Truck Center in Ashland. Joel here for our giant 4th of July sale. I still have a few Ford F-150s for only $445 a month. Tow your boat or camper this summer with a new Ford F-150 and pay only $445 a month. Butler Ford also has 2.9% financing lined up on our Ford Escapes. Not for 48 months, not for 60 months, but 72 months financing at 2.9. If I had more time, I'd tell you about the low payments and low rates we also have on our Ford Edges, Broncos, Mach-E's, well, everything on the lot. Butler says yes to $445 a month on a new F-150. Butler says yes to 2.9% financing for 72 months. Butler says yes to big 4th of July sale discounts. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where you already know. We got your truck, SUV, certified pre-owned, hybrid, and EV.
36-month lease payments at 7,500 miles per year with 7,500 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer fee with vehicle cap cost of $42,884. 72-month payments of $15.15 per thousand finance. All financing on approved credit.
106.3 KMED. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Okay, partner, belly up to the automotive talk bar. Here we go. Wheels Up Wednesday. Eric Peters. I felt like a country bumper this morning, Eric, for some reason. Just had the... I was just thinking about you out in rural Virginia. Welcome back to the show. Always good to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me. And actually, it's apropos because I got a good country story for you.
Oh, boy, do you ever. And here it is. You work on cars all the time. You write about cars. You review cars. You wax poetic about cars. You criticize the bad cars. You criticize the government, which was mostly bad when it comes to cars and trucks. And yet you had yourself a Biden moment, and it's a teachable moment. Yep. I think we could all learn from. What happened?
Yep. Well, I'm not exactly sure because I can't remember. Hence the Biden moment.
Well, we're not going to 25th Amendment you out of the show, okay? So do your best to recall.
Well, the backstory is that a few weeks ago, I decided to put the new tires that I had bought a few months ago on the wheels of my truck. I have a lift, but I don't have a tire balancer, so put the truck up on the lift, took the wheels, took the tires, went to my buddy who is a mechanic and has tire balancing equipment and all of that, dropped them off there. We have an arrangement. He gets to it when he can get to it, and I go pick them up and put them on, which I did. And fast forward a little bit, I decided to take the truck down to Lowe's to pick up some things that weren't going to really fit too well in the trunk of the press car that I had. And I heard a funky noise as I was driving down the road. And I thought at first, well, it sounds like it's a stick hitting something underneath the truck, and that's common. I've got a gravel driveway. That happens.
Yeah.
Well, the noise got louder, and to my great good credit, I did stop to get out and look. I couldn't see anything. I got under the truck and couldn't see anything. Looked all around, couldn't see anything. And then, stupidly, I decided to get back in and keep driving.
Uh-oh.
Got about 200 yards down the road when the left front wheel and tire went off the truck and bouncing down the road.
And then you end up falling down onto the road in a shower of sparks, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, kind of front hub down on the, digging a gouge in the asphalt. And luckily I was able to just cruise off to the side of the road and go hunt for the tire. And obviously what had happened was the lug nuts had worked loose. Now, I don't know whether I had failed to tighten them or tighten them enough or not check them. But anyway, the take-home point is this sort of thing can happen, and it's a lot more dangerous than running low on air in your tires. You hear people constantly advised to check your tire pressure, and that's absolutely a smart thing to do, but it's even a smarter thing to do to make sure that your lug nuts are tight, particularly after you've taken your vehicle into a brake shop or for any kind of work where they pull the wheel off the vehicle.
You know, that's a really good point, and because I had some done at a local shop there, and they said, well, come here, and then we'll re-torque it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have not done that, and I don't know if I'm at risk or not, but I mean, I have probably more wrenches and torque wrenches at home than they had in that shop, right? Mm-hmm. I, like you, we both like to wrench around a lot on mm-hmm. things. And so you're just reminding me, your experience reminds me to go back and crank them down yourself. And there's always a setting for that, and usually you'll find it in the owner's manual for torquing
there is, and you know, that brings up another thing too. It's not just that they might be loose, it's that they might be too tight. A lot of shops use air guns. A lot of times they'll over torque them. Now, on old vehicles that have steel wheels and, you know, big heavy cast iron drums and big heavy rotors like my old Trans Am has, not that much of a big deal. But modern cars have aluminum wheels, generally speaking, and they often have relatively thin rotors. And if the wheel lug nuts are over tightened, over torqued, they can warp the rotors, and those aren't cheap to replace.
Yeah, and you get the pulsating brake pad yep. and the wobble, that sort of thing. So really interesting, and that article you have, I was reading that the other day, going, oh, boy, I felt free. I'm just glad. I'm really glad, though, that there was nobody coming the other way, because it could have been a real problem.
Me too. You know, the motor gods smiled. You know, luckily, I do live in the country, and luckily I was on a rural road, and there wasn't anybody coming in the opposite lane. Because if there had been, it could have been a complete fiasco. And if I'd been going any faster, or if I'd been going in a curve, it could have been much worse, too. So I definitely dodged a bullet on that one.
There's only one time they've ever had that experience with the wheel falling off, but it was with a vehicle in front of me. It was on Interstate 5 a number of years ago, and it went bouncing. You know, as it, it went bouncing, and it bounced up, and it just missed the car. And mm-hmm. I felt, because that could be dangerous too, striking a wheel that ends up coming loose from a truck or car. Wouldn't that be the case?
It could total your car if it hits it the right way.
Yeah, but the motor god smiled on me too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's scary stuff. And the article, by the way, on EP Autos is called Don't Just Check the Air. So make mm-hmm. sure and check your lug nuts every now and then too. And by the way, torque wrenches are not that expensive. You know, you head to the store and get one, and everyone should have one, I would think.
Absolutely. It's an extremely handy and useful and important tool to have in your toolbox.
Now, I have not had the opportunity to read yet, because this went up after I went to bed last night, but drive a free, what is this about?
Well, when you can't sell something, what do? You give it away, right? Just to get it out of your hair. That's what happens a lot of times when people buy something and figure out, I really don't want this, or I don't need this, and somebody else will end up getting a good deal on it. Well, as we've talked about many times, dealers are having a heck of a time trying to sell these EVs. So I came across a story about a Colorado dealer that's taking advantage of all of the various kickbacks that you can get at the state and federal level, plus some kickbacks that Nissan itself is offering, to entice people to pick up a lease on a new Leaf EV for just $19 a month, and it's worth every penny.
Boy, $19 a month, though, is pretty cheap. I mean, that reminds me, because the Leaf has about the same range as that Spark EV that I was test driving a few years ago. It was about 90 miles, I think, wasn't it? 90 or 100 miles, something like that?
Yeah, you know, if you're willing to pay the cost of the time involved, then perhaps it's a good deal. There are probably some people out there who are retired, may not have to drive a particularly long distance, and don't drive very far. That's one of the catches. You know, you're limited to, I think it's 24,000 miles over the course of the two-year lease. So for those people, it might make some sense. But Nissan's not making any money on this. You know, it's all about moving the thing off the lot, because the dealers are squealing financially, you know, having to just bear the costs, not to mention just physically having to have these things just sitting there. It's embarrassing, and it takes up space that might be better used for the vehicles they could actually sell.
I would imagine it also costs a lot of money in the carrying costs, I think is what they call that, the interest that has to be paid to just have that stuff on the lots.
Yeah.
I think
a dealer takes out a short-term loan, as you know. You know, essentially, they get the vehicles from the manufacturer on an allotment, and the idea is to sell them. It's not, you know, to hold on to them. So, you know, the dealer technically is the first owner of the vehicle. And, you know, if the thing is still there 30 days later, then they're looking at another 30 days of payments and interest, and they don't want that. They have a very strong incentive to get those vehicles off their lot.
In a way, they're kind of an automotive version of flippers, right? You know, they get it from the they get the car from the manufacturer, they hang on to it for a while, they got to pay for it while they're doing it, then they flip it to the consumer, right? Hopefully at
exactly.
the end.
Exactly.
People would probably be amazed at just how expensive it must be to run your typical new car dealership. It has to be insane.
Oh, absolutely. You know, unless you have a lot of volume, it's really difficult to stay in business. And that's why you've seen just that, the consolidation of these dealers into these gigantic combines that have multiple brands usually. in any given town, because that's the only way that they can make any money.
Is that why they don't tend to really offer discounts for cash? Remember when it used to be you could go into a car lot and go, hey, that's all right. I not only have $10,000, it's $10,000 in cash. I could just hand it to you. You know, that kind of thing.
No, they don't want that. They want you to see the finance guy.
That's
they
what
want
I thought. You. That's yeah. what I thought, because they make money off of the loan, don't they?
Yeah, of course.
Everything. See, there we go. This is why they want you. They want you to be indebted in it, but it's their business model. I'm not making fun of them. It's just reality. It's just
Well, we're all caught up in it. You know, it's not their fault that the manufacturers are now making these vehicles that are so expensive that increasingly very few people could ever even think about paying for them in cash, and so they have to finance them.
All right. I'm speaking with Eric Peters, epautos.com, automotive journalist. If you have a question or comment, and maybe you're looking at a vehicle, you're wondering, what does Eric think about it? Maybe you have a used vehicle you have a few questions about, too. Jump on. We can talk with him.
The Bill Myers Show, 106.3 KMED.
Celebrating life on the open road and some of the best vehicles that have ever been made right now. Not that the government will probably let you drive them for much longer, but we're going to keep on it. EP Autos, Eric Peters is back. Eric, we have Keith in Cave Junction on the phone right now, and he shares your story about the tire falling off the vehicle. You want to hear that one?
I'd like to hear it.
Let me bring him on. Hey, Keith, how you doing? Okay. You're with Eric.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
1983. I'm driving a 1959 El Camino, which I wish I still owned.
Oh, the El Camino with the cat eyes in the back or whatever it is, those wings.
It was the first year, 23,000. I had three, made them into one.
Oh.
I had a sketchy brake system.
Oh.
I had pinholes. I don't know how they were in the brake line. I put brake line around it, clamped it down, going down the road. Highway 62, Prospect, long straight stretch, boom. I had those brushed aluminum slotted mags. Oh, she was a nice looking ride. Three different colors. That tire went bouncing down the road. I had maybe over tightened it, like you guys, like Eric said, and the studs just popped off. That car came to the most peaceful stop because my brake pedal went to the.
Your brake pedal went what now?
I mentioned.
What was that now? Your
Remember
brake pedal.
I said I had a leaky brake line, and I had just jerry-rigged patched it. Well, when I stomped on the brakes, they went to the floorboard, and I came to the most gentle stop. You guys just reminded me of something I haven't thought about in years. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Keith. I'm glad you made it out of it. By the way, what damage was done to the El Camino? I love that look of those old
None. None. The inner brake backing plate was ground off.
Okay. Well, that works.
I mean, I replaced the studs, retrieved the tire, and kept driving it. And in 1980, when was it? That was 83. I sold that vehicle for $350 shortly thereafter, maybe a year or so. And 10 years later, I'm kicking myself for having sold it. I didn't need to sell it. And you know they're probably worth 50 grand now.
Yeah, what would a new El Camino be going for, or a really restored El Camino, Eric? What do you think?
I know.
Do that?
It's brutal. When I think about all the cars that I've let go through my fingers for a few hundred bucks here and a few hundred bucks there.
Eric Peters with me this morning. It's 10 before 7. Happy to take your calls. Bob, you have a story, or you wanted to join in, too. How you doing? You're with Eric.
I'm doing well. Good morning, Eric. Good morning, Bill. Bill, morning. A couple days ago, you talked about taking your Vanagon out on the expressway, and you had a hard time getting that last few bit of horsepower out of it to get it up to 60.
Well, remember, Eric, I told you I got the GPS speedometer put in?
You did.
All right. I put that in, and I'm... You know, that final 5 miles, 0 to 55 with 48 horsepower is okay. That 55 to 60, man, it's brutal. It takes forever.
Did you actually time it?
Was it? Not yet. I'm going to go out and do it again. I got stung by a yellow jacket when I was doing that, so I was kind of distracted there for a little bit.
Right.
So I'll do it another time. Okay.
Yeah.
But
so
anyway,
my thought process was tire air pressure as related to horsepower on the ground. That if your tires were cold, the pressure would be a little lower, and it could affect your ability to get to 0 to 60. So when you do try it again, try it with the tires warmed up and fully up to pressure.
Yeah, when you're talking 48 thundering horsepower pushing around 3,200 pounds of van, he's probably right about that, wouldn't he, Eric? Honestly?
Oh, totally. If you really want to do a top speed run, I would jack the pressure up to 40 or 45 PSI and see how it does.
Okay. I appreciate the call there, Bob. Good hearing from you. Let me go to the next line. Hi, good morning. You're with Eric. Who's this?
Hi, this is Melissa.
Oh, hey, Melissa. You have a question or comment? We're talking talking cars and noise. Let's hear it.
I've been doing some self-reflecting and kind of brought up a memory where I was driving. Probably had a Fiat Spider 124 convertible.
Mm-hmm.
My dad called it Fix It Again Tony because, you know, it'd break down all the time. Whenever you're at a stoplight, it would overheat. But it could get really up there in the speed. So if it was going fast, it was fine. It was when it stopped and goes. And I was driving probably 85, 90 miles an hour on a country road, straight road. Nobody was there. And my tie bar broke. And the car went probably, you know, up in the air. I went flying up in the air with the tie bar, you know, hitting the asphalt. And I landed straight up. And the tow truck driver came, and he looked at it, and he goes, "You were going really, really fast, weren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I was. I guess it had to do with the fact that the tie bar had just destroyed the asphalt."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "You are so lucky that you're alive."
Oh, I know. I mean, so you landed straight. When you say straight up, like nose into the ground, kind of straight up, or something different?
No. I landed on all four wheels.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. I was thinking, boy, straight up. That was a trick. I was thinking straight up. I'm thinking you're upside.
No, straight, like just normal. Like, you know, the car obviously was destroyed, but I mean, it wasn't, you know, there was no dents or anything on it, but I couldn't drive it anymore. The tie bar was broken.
Yeah. Well,
that's why they require you have drive shaft loops in bracket racing if your car's above a certain trap speed or quickness, because of just that reason of possibly going pole vaulting down the track.
Yeah, pole vaulting on the tie rod in that particular case.
Yep.
Melissa, I'm glad you survived it, and no harm, no foul. And you're probably not doing 80 or 90 now, I'll bet, right?
I am not.
Okay.
I'm not 16 anymore.
All right. Thanks for the call. You know, Eric, it's funny she brings that up, the driving fast 16. That was the one thing that I did. I was a good kid growing up. I don't know what kind of a kid you were, but I was always the people pleaser, right? The eldest child, you know, they always modeled after adults, that sort of thing. But I'll tell you, when I got behind the wheel of a car, that was where I rebelled. Man.
Oh, me too.
Oh, you too? Oh, man.
Totally.
I mean, routinely, back roads in Ohio, and I was just talking about this with Val Swartz, a person who's running the high school reunion I'm going to later this year, right? And we were talking about how many of our classmates had passed away, and most of them from diseases. But, you know, there was one person who died from a car wreck back at that time, right? But we routinely would drive 100, 120 miles an hour on the country back roads like what you have in West Virginia.
Absolutely. I got my 74 Beetle once on a downhill with the wind at my back. Over 90 miles an hour. And if you've not driven an old Beetle that fast, it's an experience to be experienced.
A Beetle? 90? You know, a Beetle's kind of weird at 60 miles an hour sometimes.
Yes.
But, of course, here I am talking about that van again. Let me go to line three here. Eric Peters with me this morning at epautos.com. Good morning. Hi, who's this?
This is from Jacksonville.
Jim, take it away. You got a story or a question for Eric? Fire away.
Just a quick one, Eric, on tolerance and nuts. We were, this has to do with trailer hitches, and you need always to check the right trailer hitch that you're putting on if you have different trailer hitch balls. Long story short, we're heading down to the Colorado River towing a very nice race boat, and I look out the rear window when my friend Kenny, the driver, said, "Uh-oh, the boat," and I can't see
no.
The driver.
Those are words you don't want to hear.
The boat, and the hitch has gotten loose, and I look out the left window, and the trailer on the tandem, beautiful trailer, is racing us across the desert.
Oh, and no.
Did somebody forget to put the pin in?
No, it was the wrong. It was a 1 3/4 instead of a 2-inch ball. And it had a semi-lunar crack on it, which we drove at 200 miles with the pressure holding that smaller wrong size trailer hitch ball on. So always check your balls before you tow. That's
all I have to say. Listening to that, I'm thinking the words you never want to hear are, there goes the boat.
Yeah, there goes the boat. Especially to have the trailer racing you downhill, right?
God.
All right. Hey, Eric, before we take off, I love this kind of stuff, but what's your latest review? Because you get to drive the coolest cars. In fact, some of the cars, frankly, are just, we're getting to the point where there's fewer cars and everything's going to be an SUV or a crossover or a truck. But what's going on?
Well, here's another in the department of fewer, and it won't be a vehicle I'll ever review again. Volvo just announced that it's canceling their S60 sedan. Oh, I had another Biden moment. Because it's not selling that well. And, you know, Volvo actually is in a kind of a pickle because at one time Volvo sold cars that were uniquely safe, right? That was their big sell. And also very tough and very durable. Well, now everybody sells safe cars and durable cars. So it's really hard for Volvo to make a case for its cars. And particularly for sedans, they're just not selling that well. So this one's going away, which is a shame because it's a very interesting alternative to the better-known cars in the segment, like the BMW 3 Series, for example, and the Mercedes C300. It's available with an interesting plug-in hybrid combo that puts out close to 500 horsepower and will allow you to drive about 40 miles, had another Biden moment, on a fully charged, if the battery in it is fully charged.
All right. So I'll direct listeners to that review. And I'm almost out of time. I just wanted to make mention briefly here. The Safety Fallacy is a must read because you talk about how government's influence on the vehicle design has really just made it safer to crash, not necessarily safer to drive. And you brought up something in there. And I think about that when I drive my old Volkswagen, is how huge the windows are and how you can see everywhere and avoid trouble, unlike a modern car, which has tiny windows everywhere you're looking at. And this is about rollover protection, right? That's all from the feds. Fair enough.
Yeah, you know, we're taught, we're conditioned to believe that it's because of government that cars are safer, and it's actually not so. If you look at the majority of the really significant increase changes in vehicle design that have made vehicles safer, i.e. less prone to crash, really good example, the dual reservoir master cylinder. I had a 64 Corvair once upon a time, and it had a single reservoir master cylinder, which meant that if there was a failure in the hydraulic system, you had no brakes. Well, pretty much all cars made after about 1965 or 66, I can't remember, the manufacturers, not the government, decided that it would be a good idea to have a dual reservoir master cylinder so that if there was a hydraulic problem, you'd only lose two of your four brakes.
Yeah, you'd still have half your brakes left. That's good.
Yeah, the government didn't do that. You know, the government didn't put four-wheel disc brakes on cars. The government didn't mandate radial tires. The government didn't mandate good suspension systems with rear sway bars. All of those things came into being because they were good ideas, and people looked at it and thought, hey, I like the idea of having a car that stops better and is more controllable. Now we get all of these after-the-fact things to try to counteract the problems imposed by government, like what you were talking about. Cars are so much harder to see out of. Now you have to have cameras. Now you have to have all of these technologies to keep you from bumping into things.
Yeah.
So, you know, the take-home point is it's not government that makes cars safer. It's the market that does.
The Safety Fallacy. It's a wonderful article. You'll read up on that and a bunch more good stuff on epautos.com. Eric, have yourself a wonderful week. Take the rest of the week off if you can. We'll talk next Wednesday.
I wish I could, but I don't think that's going to happen.
All right. I'll see you next Wednesday, okay?
Thanks, Bill.
Shade before 7 o'clock. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford. KBXG, Grants Pass.
Drake's Paint and Supply, your only local.